And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio's solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about Alabama. I'm talking about this show sends its signal like way on down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden and parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Hey, first one on the Triple Dipper, I'm calling it Russian roulette, which is a bit of a euphemism, but the reality is Russian roulette's a dangerous game, and what we saw this past weekend was dangerous times, man. So if you're, I'm going to catch you up to speed. Some of it, if you're news hounds, this is what you've been seeing for the last couple of days, but I want to break it down to the low levels and then work our way back up to strategic levels. So just to give you the backstory, there's a guy named Yevgeny Prigozhin. Yevgeny Prigozhin, and I've got a piece here from Daily Wire that helps with his background, but Yevgeny Prigozhin has been a friend or a confidant of Putin for years. He served time in prison, almost a decade, really, for assault and robbery and fraud back in the 80s. He got out and began to work in restaurants, started his own catering business, and lo and behold, the catering business got friendly with the Kremlin. The catering business became the chief caterer to the Kremlin. And then eventually, he began to form this thing which is now known as the Wagner Group. The Wagner Group has become Putin's mercenary army. And when I say a mercenary army, I'm not talking about like something you might go, well, Phil, don't we have civilian contractors that carry arms into, yeah, and they carry arms like, you know, small arms and basic weapon systems. And they do things like, you know, guarding facilities and you know, targeting key locations. Not like this. Most recently, the Wagner Group has been in charge of an entire sector of the Ukraine war, the Bakhmut area, where the fighting has been devastating. And I don't mean like a little bit devastating. I mean, I'm talking about like World War I trench warfare on an epic scale, devastating. The Wagner Group is said to have lost 20,000 men just in that section of the country alone. Can you imagine? You look back at the entire 20 years we spent in Afghanistan. I want to say we had something like 12,000 to 13,000 casualties, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not minimizing that at all. What I'm saying is imagine one small sector in 1 year and one group called the Wagner Group loses 20,000. These are mercenaries paid under contract through the Wagner Group. They're not part of the Russian army, and yet they have tanks, artillery, armored vehicles, logistical supply trains. They have everything it takes to be their own separate division. And they are getting uncontrollable. So Yevgeny Prigozhin formed the Wagner Group after being a caterer to the Kremlin, got some seed money, hired a few guys, began working and building up. Stories are that the Wagner Group is accused of massacring and raping civilians in Africa, exploiting natural resources in other poor countries. Resources like gold, oil, and gas, which all go back to the Russian government with deniability because they're not technically Russian army. They operate in South America, Africa, the Middle East, Asia, Europe. The Wall Street Journal says its investigative reporters have identified 64 companies that are linked to Wagner that serve as fronts to move money and assets back to the Kremlin. And hundreds of Wagner troops faced off against U.S. forces in Syria during the Trump administration, and we whacked them. I'm talking about decimated them, killed a bunch of them. They're not overly trained. In fact, a lot of them are being conscripted right out of prisons, offered a chance for freedom if they'll come fight for Wagner, and they'll take it. So the Russian government has allowed Wagner to grow and to grow and to grow. I heard this morning, I think it was Condoleezza Rice was discussing this and said that what's basically happened is Dr. Frankenstein created the Frankenstein monster and the Frankenstein monster turned on the doctor. And that's what happened this past weekend. This guy, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is mad because he's finding out that senior leadership in the Russian army doesn't like him. He's finding out that senior leadership in the Russian army is offering to let his conscripts, his Wagner soldiers, become actual soldiers in the Russian army, thereby losing his, you know, his dollar signs. I mean, he's made billions, billions, being a thug for Putin. So what did he do this past weekend? He took his troops, left the battlefield, and started a road march to Moscow. Now, this is a 12-hour road march. But he, and for those of y'all that don't know, when you're moving mass troops across an area, if you're going in with the intent to, you know, fight your way through, you wind up keeping your vehicles completely manned and ready. Otherwise, what you might do is railhead them, or at the very least, over the roads, hauling, using freight haulers to haul your tanks and things to save the wear and tear on the roads, and by the way, the wear and tear on the tanks and the armored vehicles. No, not in this case. There was no railheading. There was no movement overland in any other way except for a fighting posture. He took, this is where it gets really wild. So there's a city just across the border called Rostov-on-Don. Rostov-on-Don was the center of military command and control for the Russian army for the Ukraine fight. The Wagner troops rolled in and took over Rostov-on-Don. And they were treated as heroes by the people there. So this is not looking good for Putin, right? 25,000 troops are now marching towards the capital, fully armed, coming off the battlefield with the intent to fight. While they're marching, it gets worse for Putin, because attack helicopters began to circle the area and come after the Wagner troops who are moving down the road. Wagner troops, using surface-to-air missiles apparently, took out 7 Russian aircraft. It was the biggest one-day loss of Russian aircraft in the entire war, and I've been told it's the biggest one-day loss of Russian aircraft since the war in Afghanistan for Soviet Union. I mean, this is big doings, y'all. They're literally fighting their way through to Moscow. A 12-hour road march, they stop at about the 10-hour mark. Stop cold. And what we're told is that the Belarusian president, and if you're looking at a map, just picture, there's Ukraine, and it's like, let's say it's like the state of Arizona. Right up there above it to the right is Oklahoma. Just below that is Texas. Picture that. That's like Texas is Russia, Arizona is Ukraine, Oklahoma is Belarus. Belarus is like a puppet of Russia, but the Belarusian president's a guy named Lukashenko. And rather than Putin getting out there and doing something, rather than the Russian army posing a fight for the Wagner troops, the Belarusian president is claimed to have brokered a deal between Wagner and Russia. Keep in mind, 3 days before, Wagner was fighting for Russia. Y'all, can you imagine an army of 25,000 fully armed, armored vehicles, tanks, all of it, rolling up the interstate towards Washington, D.C.? And they're not coming from a foreign country. They're ours. It's as if Fort Benning, Georgia got mad and decided to send the 3rd Infantry Division north to D.C. That's what this is like. Roughly the distance and the capabilities. You got hardened fighters coming off the battlefield, loading up, rolling out their tanks, trucks, and equipment, and headed to Moscow. Keep in mind, Moscow is the capital of a nuclear nation. Now you start thinking about all these movies. How many movies have we had over the years? I mean, you've got The Hunt for Red October, Crimson Tide with Denzel Washington, and that was a great one, as a matter of fact. Crimson Tide with Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman. The whole backstory on that was that there was a rogue element within the Soviet Union that decided to seize nuclear assets, and they were being forced to decide whether they were supposed to respond or not. What happens if Wagner, with 25,000 armed forces, gets anywhere close to a nuclear site? What do we do? So right now, NATO is staring down this thing going, what in God's name just happened? They just pulled off the battlefield. They're marching to Moscow. Not only that, holy crap. And so I'm going to tell you right now, I guarantee you there's contingency plans that were being pulled off a shelf and dusted off. What does NATO do? We're trying to stay boots on the ground out of that war, right? What do we do if suddenly it looks like nuclear weapons could fall into the wrong hands? Do we offer Russia a chance to let us come in and help? Do we take them out ourselves with, you know, Tomahawk missiles from afar? Do we mass U.S. troops on the border against Russia to make sure they can't march back? What do we do with this? And oh, by the way, Biden's in charge. All right, listen, I'm going to break this down in more detail. We just had, literally while I'm speaking to you, Putin came out and gave his first full statement to the press. And I'll see if I can gather up some of that. But what he's basically saying is these were criminal acts and they will not be allowed to stand. All right, let's take a break, Boone. We'll do that right now. I'll come right back. We're in number one of the Triple Dipper, Russian Roulette. Coming up top of the hour, Major General Joe Arbuckle will be on here to give us his thoughts as a military strategic planner. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Coming up top of the hour, we'll be having a conversation about Russia and the situation with Wagner Group with retired two-star General Joe Arbuckle, who had a long career, which included a pretty strong stint in national-level strategic planning. So, yeah, we'll get his thoughts and perspectives on all this. Let me jump back in, though. I'm calling number one of the Triple Dipper, Russian Roulette. This is no small thing, y'all. I mean, this was a brewing ugly situation. Article here from 1945.com. What happens to Russia's nuclear weapons if a civil war breaks out? And it points out the fact that with 25,000 soldiers of fortune marching on Moscow, we had an evident breakdown in civil order, conjured up the specter that nuclear weapons, it says, or more likely materials even, useful for making nuclear radiological weapons, might come under the control of rebel, insurgent, or terrorist forces. It says nuclear weapon states now come in many shapes and sizes, and but yet one of them has always been Russia. Russia has more nukes than any other nation on the face of the earth. And when you consider the strength of what the Wagner was taking down the road, the Wagner Group, you have to look at it and go, that's formidable. If they decided to turn to their east and roll in on a nuclear site, could we have stopped them? Could Russia have stopped them? Now, Putin was just on a moment ago, and his comments were basically, this suppression would have been shut down if they had not turned back on their own. Okay, bold words, Cotton, but the reality is this was big doings. This was not going to be a small fight. This was going to be people who were going to be whining. If they were willing to follow Yevgeny Prigozhin against the capital of Moscow, you got to know that they had their game on. Here's a piece, though, that people are speculating. House Intel Chairman Mike Turner, congressman from Ohio, he said on Sunday during one of the talk shows that he believes that Yevgeny Prigozhin had multiple accomplices inside of Russia to help him pull off his feet of moving his forces from Ukraine to just a couple hours away from Moscow. He says, then entering Moscow, I mean, this is, by the way, he got to, it's like getting into downtown Birmingham with target being Huntsville. You were that close. That's how close it was. This was, in the grand scheme of maneuver, they were pressing in. And then entering into Moscow, it says, entering into Russia itself, taking their convoy to Moscow, that really shows to the basic issue of whether or not Putin controls his own military. For any government to have stability, said the congressman, they have to control their military. Obviously, Prigozhin, in order to make it that distance, has to have accomplices. Well, one of the things that I heard General Jack Keane say over the weekend was he looks at it and believes that his sources are telling him, he said, that Prigozhin believed that he had the backing of a number of senior military leaders who were going to come out in favor of his, you know, his fight and maybe even join him in the process. That did not happen. I think he saw the handwriting on the wall, basically, and recognized that he had just put himself, committed himself to a fight that he may not have any chance of taking, you know, all the way through. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in the Daily Wire says the Wagner Group's uprising revealed a weakness in the Russian regime. Going on all the talk shows on Sunday, Blinken's comments were, I think you've seen cracks emerge that weren't there before. Prigozhin himself in this entire incident, he says, has raised profound questions about the very premises for Russia's aggression against Ukraine. So basically, here's what's happened. Another thing that's going on here. Prigozhin goes in saying, you pay me big money, I'll take my men, we will fight and we will win. He's been hemorrhaging men, just getting waxed. And then on top of all that, he begins to think, I guess, to himself, and then he begins to announce to the whole world his dissent with what's happening. This war should never have happened, he says. This war is a farce. There was all this talk about how we were going over there to denazify Ukraine or to try and liberate oppressed Russian citizens, and none of it was true. And he's saying all this on the world stage. Meanwhile, he's getting paid billions of rubles by Moscow. And so the tension is rising on all of this. Prigozhin claims that Russian military leaders also targeted his own men, that they laid landmines on his escape routes from the battlefield, and that they also targeted, most recently, they rocketed one of his headquarters. He says, there's been no external verification, but he says. And so in his words, he's had enough. And he leaves the battlefield and he heads out to Moscow. Now, the Wall Street Journal did a pretty epic job of covering this over the weekend. And I've got a stack of stuff here. But in my mind, this is one of the biggest things that I have seen in the world stage in maybe ever. I mean, this is like something out of a movie. I mean, what was that old Chuck Norris movie where the mercenary army invaded New York? Well, do you remember that movie? It was like, it may have been called Invasion USA. I think it was. It was Invasion USA. I mean, can you imagine a freaking mercenary army? Tanks, armored personnel carriers, trucks. They've got supply trains. They're marching down the road. You got the 3rd ID marching up from Fort Stewart to daggum Washington, D.C. That's what this is like. The whereabouts right now, so bottom line, too, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of the Wagner Group, is now missing. We don't know where he is. He's still alive. Do you find it? You're nodding your head.
Invasion USA.
Chuck Norris?
Yes, Chuck Norris.
One man took out a mercenary army trying to take over New York City.
The poster with the guns out blazing.
It's a whole other story. So Prigozhin's now missing. Lukashenko from Belarus allegedly negotiated the opportunity for Prigozhin to depart the scene and fly to Belarus. We don't know if he's there or not. The Biden administration said just before the show, they don't know if he's there or not. Nobody knows where he is. He did release an audio statement today, but there's no proof of life, so to speak, other than his audio statement. That being said, his whereabouts being unknown, the fact is he left the battlefield. Something flipped a switch. Something said all this hubris, all this smack talk, all of this 25,000 troops that I'm marching to Moscow, something made it come to a grinding halt. What do we have? I mean, can you imagine what a guy like that, the goods he has on Putin, tucked away in a special safe somewhere with directions to open it upon his death? I'm going to tell you right now, he better hire a soup tester, but I guarantee you he's got some goods on Putin. All right, listen, we're going to come back in a minute and talk to Major General Joe Arbuckle, retired now, but spent a lot of years as a strategic planner. I want to get his thoughts on this. What level of planning are we looking at? What kind of contingency ops has the United States got to consider in a situation like this? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Right Side.